I want to thank very much the organizers for including me in this exciting event. The topic of my talk is the relation between strong emergence, top-down causation, and irreversibility. And I would like to start by explaining the concept of emergence. So this term has already been used a couple of times in this conference, but there are different definitions of emergence. So I would like to make a clear distinction between weak emergence and strong emergence. So first, very generally, what is emergence? Look at this hierarchy of systems here. So the units or objects on one level are the parts of the objects on the next hierarchical level. So molecules are composed of atoms, cells of molecules, and so on. So emergence means that the whole, the system on one level has properties that its parts do not have. That's a very general concept of emergence. So a molecule can have chirality, a cell can have a metabolism, a person can have a character or aspirations. That's emergence. How do we scientists proceed in order to understand emergence? That's very clear. All of us work in a reductionist way. So we take a system, we take it apart, look at the parts and their interaction, and we explain the emergent property in terms of the parts and their interactions. And that's what I am also doing when I study complex systems, when I'm making a model of a biological system. And this reductionist procedure is so successful that it has led many physicists to believe that ultimately everything can be reduced, even if not in practice, then at least in principle, to the lowest level, and that the laws that are supposedly very fundamental that govern everything. So in this case, where reduction is believed to be complete in principle, where the fundamental theory is just the one that acts at the lowest level for the particles and their interactions, in this case, emergence would be only weak. So is this laser pointer supposed to work? Oh, no. If you have only weak emergence, then all the causal influences go from bottom up. So ultimately, the causal causes act on the level of particles and their interactions, and anything else that you see higher up is ultimately reducible to what happens down here. That's the view of weak emergence. I want to argue today for the opposite view, which is strong emergence. And I can anticipate that many of you will disagree with me pretty early in my argument. So I would suggest that you just wait until I have finished my story. I would like to explain it all together, and then we can discuss as intensely as you want. But the next two speakers will generally agree with me, so we'll have more on this later. So the view of strong emergence is the following. Reduction, as successful as it is not completely exact and complete. It's always partial, approximate. It requires some additional things that you put in. If this is true, then emergence is strong, or is called strong emergence. So then the emergent properties are not fully reducible to the lowest level properties. And then there can also be causal errors going down from the higher level. So you would rather than have the view that all levels are in some way fundamental and there are fundamental properties that are not just on the microscopic level, and you have mutual influences between the levels and none has the absolute priority. That's the view I want to defend, and in the following I will give you 5 arguments for strong emergence. And I will mainly focus on physics. So instead of going up here towards biology and sociology, in the end you could also stay within physics, go to condensed matter physics, statistical physics, and all the way up to cosmology. You can build different hierarchies. So I will mainly focus on the transition between atomic physics, or atoms, and solids, or condensed matter systems, and statistical physics. My first argument. The parts have never, ever existed without the whole. The hole might have looked different in the past, but there was always a context in which the parts were embedded. And since this is a cosmology conference, I cannot abstain from showing this picture. And as all of you know, the types of objects and particles that we have in the universe depends on the temperature of the universe, on the energy and mass density, on the degrees of freedom of the quantum vacuum. So there's a clear top-down influence of the hole on the parts. Second point, full reduction to the quantum mechanics of 10 to the 23 atoms is never done in condensed matter physics. Here's a quotation from Tony Leggett, who was here at the beginning of last week. No significant advance in the theory of matter and bulk has ever come about through derivation from microscopic principles. The so-called derivations from microscopic principles alone are almost all bogus. And as he has said last week, for him it's not just a matter of doability, for him it's a matter of qualitative difference between the classical world and the quantum world.
So you're questioning the whole program of quantum gravity?
Yes, certainly. So, here's another of my favorite quotations. Walter Kohn developed density functional theory. The many electron wave function is not a legitimate scientific concept for more than 1,000 particles, because the wave function can neither be calculated nor recorded with sufficient accuracy. So I think wave functions of the universe or of a gas at finite temperature of 10 to the 23 particles and the associated huge amount of entanglement are just never, ever measurable. So it's not a scientific concept, and I think we should not use this in our scientific theories. My third argument, emergent phenomena are determined by higher order principles which are independent of many microscopic details. So when we build a theory of our system, condensed matter, or complex systems, what we do is we employ a lot of intuition, a lot of understanding of what's going on, a lot of understanding what are the relevant variables. And these we put in our theory, and then we can explain how the emergent property comes from these ingredients and their interaction. So here's a quotation by Bob Laughlin, who has emphasized this point that higher order principles govern our solid state or condensed matter theories. The Josephson quantum is exact because of continuous symmetry breaking. So that's flux line quantization coming from this. The quantum Hall effect is exact because of localization. Neither of these things can be deduced from microscopics, and both would continue to lead to exact results even if the theory of everything were changed. His point is, when we do a solid state experiment, we use a system that is not completely characterized. There are many defects, there's noise due to temperature. Nevertheless, we can measure many things with very high precision, and we can make very, very good theories for this, because many of the things that happen in these systems are just insensitive to all these microscopic details. So we invoke higher order principles. And these principles, let me say it again, are to a large extent insensitive to the microscopic details. So the microscopic level is just not relevant for many things that happen. Another person who has a similar view is Phil Anderson. So that's the last Nobel laureate in condensed matter physics I'm quoting. He wrote this famous paper in 1972, More is Different. And he argues we can never predict, let's say, elephants from quantum field theory. And the reason is the following. As you go up in the hierarchy of systems, you break symmetries. So just from the particles and their interactions, many arrangements of the particles are possible and equally plausible based on energies or whatever. So what is realized in nature, we cannot even in principle predict. But then the symmetries, the specific arrangement of atoms, let's say in a protein or in a nucleic acid or in the DNA, this has a lot of consequences for what happens at that level. Furthermore, when you look at symmetry breaking, let's say in phase transitions, at critical points, you know that these are described by universal theories that are completely independent of many microscopic details. They depend only on very few universal properties. Here again, you have the higher order principles that just don't care about many microscopic details. My fourth argument. Higher level theories require new fundamental laws. Fundamental need not be microscopic. Fundamental just means it cannot be reduced to something else. And I want to use one of my favorite examples because I'm a statistical physicist. I want to use statistical physics here. And there's a lot of disagreement, I know, but let me make the point I want to make here. Let's first look at statistical mechanics down here. Statistical mechanics is based on the concept of probabilities. You formulate everything with probabilities, partition functions, and so on. So this is a stochastic theory, and it is also irreversible. When you have probabilistic transitions, you can easily derive second law of thermodynamics just from a probabilistic model. And in fact, I would like to argue more in this conference the relation between stochasticity and irreversibility. I think both are closely related. The concept of a probability, if it is an objective probability, is time asymmetric because it always refers to the future. So you have here statistical mechanics. Up here you have supposedly more fundamental theories. In earlier times it was the classical mechanics. Now we prefer to take quantum mechanics. If you confine quantum mechanics to unitary time evolution, then you have for both theories a deterministic time reversible theory. And I also think these two features are closely related, but that's also something we can discuss later. So there are many, many derivations that derive statistical mechanics from classical or quantum mechanics. And I want to point out that all these derivations, when you look at them very closely, make implicitly always a probabilistic assumption. I mentioned this yesterday briefly in a comment. So they always make in some way an assumption of equal probability of statistical independence, of randomness. So they import this concept which is completely foreign to a deterministic world into the arguments, and that's how you derive statistical mechanics. So you import a new concept which is fundamental, is my claim. So how can it be that at the same time you have the lower level laws? And I never claim that lower level laws are, so that complex systems do not obey lower level laws. But how are these lower level laws acting at the level of the particles compatible with the idea that there are new laws at higher levels? How is this logically compatible? And here's my next argument. Lower level theories, as successful as they are neither exact nor complete. So I wish we would have learned from the history of classical mechanics that no theory is really infinitely exact. So for 200 years, people believed that Newtonian mechanics is exact, and then we had all these revolutions 100 years ago. That's, by the way, the orbit of Mercury, just to demonstrate the limitations of classical mechanics. And there is really no reason to think that any other of our theories is completely exact. And if it's only slightly inexact, then when you come to 10 to the 23 particles, maybe all these inexactnesses add up to the extent that you can just predict nothing from the fundamental theory. And you need new concepts or new rules to tell you what happens at that higher level. And they are not complete. And I think this is demonstrated most nicely by quantum mechanics itself. You cannot formulate quantum mechanics completely by just writing down the Schrödinger equation or something equivalent and the unitary time evolution. You always supplement it with a rule what happens at a measurement or with a rule for pre and post selection, and those processes are stochastic and irreversible, and I think they are closely related to statistical mechanics because all these measurements apparatuses or these devices that cause the, however you want to view it, the collapse of the wave function are macroscopic at finite temperature. So So in fact, it dawned on me just not too long ago that in fact the measurement process itself and the chance that you have there is a top-down effect, because what are the, so the possible outcomes of the, let's call it collapse, and the probabilities for these different outcomes are determined by the environment of the quantum system. That's the next hierarchical level. It's the environment of the system that determines the probabilities and the possible outcomes, the things that can happen. That's, in my view, a clear top-down effect, which is many people try to explain away, but I find none of these explanations convincing. This seems to me the most obvious and straightforward thing. And this ultimately would mean that chance, randomness, is also a top-down effect from the environment of a system, from the rest of the world, on a system. And if chance is a top-down effect, and if randomness is somehow related to time, then also time, directedness of time would emerge in a strong sense from the interaction between different levels of complexity. That's what I want to claim here, and I'm looking forward to the discussion. That's the end.
It's on.
Hi, Barbara. Very well done. Thank you. I remember the first time you talked to me about top-down causation, I had a similar question as Nayesh, which was, should I be doing quantum gravity by studying sociology? But you made very, very good argument. Very good arguments, and you brought very provocative aspects. I think top-down causation is very important for us because we are not used to it. It's not the way that we make physics usually. And one question I have is the fact you if the information is supposed to come from level to level down and down, I've asked you this once, but could you say, do you believe there is a lower level of description, which is what a lot of us here is used to think? There is a fundamental level and you cannot go below that. That's one question. The other thing is more of a comment. It's saying that irreversibility can be connected to stochasticity, but not necessarily. There can be other types of evolutionary dynamics which are irreversible, non-stochastic, for example, surjective functions, and we've been looking for more, but I agree with you that it's a very strong and important part of it.
I think deterministic theories move the randomness in the initial conditions, so they don't get rid of it. The other question, is there a fundamental theory? I think there are many fundamental theories that are good in their context. And I want to say it again, fundamental need not be microscopic. So I think on different levels you have fundamental theories, and both types of systems influence each other. As you know, these.
Is there one lower level, or can you always go down in complexity to simpler and simpler systems?
There might be lower levels. I'm not an expert in this, but they might be completely irrelevant for the higher levels, because these higher order principles just don't depend on many of the microscopic features.
So you're not sure if there's one lowest level? Sorry, my question
is... who cares? I mean, yeah.
David?
People can probably hear. So look, on the first three points that you mentioned, I'm just puzzled. Sorry. On the first three points, I guess I don't see why anybody who believes in what you're calling strong emergence would need to deny any of the first three points. I don't see the slightest bit of tension
between believing in what you call strong emergence and the truth. All of these points are true. The parts have never existed without the whole. Full reduction to quantum mechanics is never actually done. That is, people don't do the calculation. Of course, the calculation is complicated. Emergent phenomena are characterized also by the emergence of, you know, simpler principles, as in the case of thermodynamics and so on and so forth. On the first three, I just don't, I don't see what the tension is at all. I don't see why any believer in strong emergence wouldn't wholeheartedly agree with the first three points.
You mean believers in weak emergence? So
I don't see why a believer in strong emergence would disagree. No, strong emergence is what she's defending.
Yeah, and these are arguments in favor of strong emergence.
No. Excuse me. I don't see why a defender of weak emergence would be tempted to disagree even a tiniest bit with any of the first three points. So I don't understand why any of them are supposed to be arguments against weak emergence. Second, on the last two points, I guess I just really disagree. On the next to last point, you used the example of classical statistical mechanics. And the idea seemed to be that that probabilities just don't have a place to fit in a theory with deterministic dynamics. I just don't think that's true. One can perfectly well have a theory with the deterministic dynamics and a probability distribution over initial conditions. One knows exactly how to deal with that theory. It's just not right that the appearance of probabilities in a fundamental physical theory requires that the dynamics be stochastic. There are other places for probabilities to interpose themselves, like in probability distributions over initial conditions. And just before, and then I'll shut up. And on the quantum mechanic, of course it's true that we haven't had any perfect physical, lower level physical theories yet. Life is tough, okay? Science is hard. There is an argument that we're doing better and better. There is an argument that the history of science is encouraging to people who would hope. So there's, in philosophy, people talk about an optimistic meta-induction and a pessimistic meta-induction. The pessimistic meta-induction is all historical theories turned out to be false. All theories will be false. The optimistic meta-induction is we've had a historical succession of better and better theories. We can be encouraged to believe that we're converging on something that is going to be exact and complete. And the particular case of quantum mechanics as an example of how that can't be, I just really strongly disagree with. We have so many models of quantum mechanics now where we have what you're calling a lower level description that incorporates the effects of measurements. In exactly the way that you were denying is possible. Sorry to have gone on so long.
I mean, I think your last argument is a good demonstration of what Stuart Kaufman explained earlier today, that you can always find different explanations and auxiliary hypotheses to defend your position. But to me, this goes so far that I just cannot make my mind accept the idea of many worlds, of infinite entanglement, of whatever.
Nobody's talking about many worlds.
Let me finish. I have more points to make here. So for me, there's no reason whatsoever to give the lower level the priority. I think it's a prejudice or a preconceived view, a worldview that you bring into your approach to science, which is pretty materialistic, reductionistic.
You were telling us, you were giving us arguments for that. I understand that that's how you feel, but you were telling us that you were giving us arguments for that.
Yes.
And the first three, I just don't see how anybody would interpret them as arguments. The last two, I think, are based on claims that just aren't true.
I mean, you built your auxiliary hypotheses to make all this fit into your view of science. I mean, this something that cannot be done even in principle is not a scientific idea. It's a preconceived assumption that cannot be proved wrong or right in science. And even with determinism, you can push everything back to the initial conditions. But then you must assume that the initial conditions are precisely defined to an uncountable number of digits. And in practice, it gives exactly the same results as a true stochastic theory, so which is a simpler assumption. And furthermore, I think quantum mechanics has taught us that a state is not defined with an infinite number of bits, but only with a finite number of bits. There is no infinite precision. I think that's one of the lessons from quantum mechanics. And the concept of entropy means there's a finite number of states in a finite system, because entropy counts states. So there is no such thing as an infinitely precisely defined initial wave function that evolves deterministically and contains everything that happens now. These are incredibly strong assumptions, and I claim the view I proposed here is much simpler, much more realistic. And one last point, the first thing you have to accept as true before you do science is that you are an agent that is thinking and following the laws of logic and free to decide which theory to accept and reject. That's the a priori reality that you have to assume, and that's a higher level reality that you have to start from. Everything else, so if any of your conclusions denies this possibility that you do science and arrive at correct conclusions, then the theory is somehow self-killing, I think, yeah.
So Neil, is that very quick? Otherwise we have three other people here. Okay.
The fundamental point I want to take up is that your somewhat pessimistic outlook. In particular, I mean, the people you quoted, the Nobel Prize winners in condensed matter, were generally making those comments against physicists looking for a unified theory, as if this is somehow a hopeless, fruitless search. And I think that has so been disproved. For example, the recent discovery of gravitational waves from LIGO. Nobody can contest that Einstein's theory of gravity is probably the most fundamental theory anybody ever invented.
Yeah,
reductionist
it's fine, yeah.
Theory, true to unbelievable precision, which you know one does not find in all over the place.
But not to infinite precision.
So I think there's a sort of confusion that somehow, because high energy physics was focused on small scales and was a reductionist science, people said, oh, you know, learning the laws of physics on small scales is never going to teach us everything. I think that's obvious. I mean, the universe, we need to describe the universe, not just the tiniest things in it. And there has been a wrong emphasis on the microscopic. And I think when we deal with the Big Bang singularity, there's an excessive emphasis on trying to see, you know, what really happens at the Planck density. It's really a problem of the whole universe. But the main point I want to say is that the search for unified theory and consistency among all these different levels is extremely important and has been extremely fruitful. So when there are consistency arguments and arguments of principle, it doesn't really matter how many particles there are. These are just a sine qua non. If your theory is inconsistent, you better abandon it. And I think the kinds of arguments you're making is sort of that there's room for everybody and we all work in different spheres and none of the spheres overlap. That is absolutely incompatible with the progress of physics that we have seen.
Now, I think one important issue here is whether any theory can be causally closed, whether it can give a causally closed account of reality. And why should it? I mean, in mathematics, you have these incompleteness theorems. And I think the same is true in physics. There is just no theory that encompasses everything. Why should there be? That's an extremely strong claim that, for instance, because of measurement process. It's in straight contradiction with linear superposition.
OK, let's maybe go to the next question.
OK, so I'm actually going to almost contradict Neil. And I think the point that lower level theories are neither exact nor complete is important. And I'd say I'm an optimistic pessimist, maybe. I think there. We're looking for a unified theory. We all sort of think there might be one, but I think probably there isn't one. because that would somehow end physics, wouldn't it, if we have the one true theory? I think there'll always be something else we need to understand. There'll always be a level more, so we'll never be exact or complete in whatever we regard as the best theory at the moment. On the other hand, I would say that just because we don't know the lower level theory exactly or completely doesn't mean we can't infer higher level theories. And I'm not even sure that we have uncertainties in the lower level, but these uncertainties in the lower level might wash out as we go up to higher levels, so that if we have a coarse graining, then the mistakes we made in describing each of the microscopic systems will wash out as we go higher. So maybe we can actually infer a higher level from lower level, as long as we're not trying to make too big steps. We might have to make a lot of very small steps from one to the next, but I don't think it's in principle impossible to infer a higher level from lower level.
But also take into account the higher level always sets the boundary conditions, the initial conditions, and the degrees of freedom of the lower level. So there is always an interaction in both ways. There's one more thing I wanted to say. I'm not against the progress in science, and I was expecting that the Higgs boson would be detected, because I had learned a lot of particle physics, and I was pretty sure that it will be detected. So, but it's just not the explanation of everything in the world. It's yeah, I was excited too that it was found, yes. I mean, it's not relevant for the solid state phenomena or the condensed matter phenomena that we are studying. It's the foundation, yeah. But for the everyday practice, we apply higher order principles or other theories which are also fundamental and irreducible.
You see, this is when the argument goes wrong. It's when you argue that sort of fundamental understanding, whether on small scales or very large scales, is an illusion. That's when you go wrong.
So let's stick to our next question, just to keep it on time, okay?
Hi, I wanted to ask about a way that you would respond to a kind of argument that a reductionist would make, which would be a response to the first three points. So I think a lot of people who think weak emergence is okay, but strong emergence isn't, would say something like, there are cases in condensed matter physics where we have theories that are more computationally tractable, that give us accounts of phenomena that we can't understand going from underlying first principles of quantum mechanics. But maybe we expect that the quantum mechanical description is accurate, and the fact that the condensed matter physics works is because it's a good approximation to the underlying quantum principles that's just more computationally tractable. And so I think there's a common move that people would make in saying, we're using theories that we expect to approximate some other underlying theory. And the success of those theories reflects the underlying accuracy of the principles and claims that the more fundamental theory makes. So I think for strong emergence, you might look for a kind of case where you would say that the success of the theory can't be explained by virtue of the more fundamental theory. And I'm worried that I might just...
consistent with it or something.
Yeah. It's actually success because it's different. And I might be revealing my lack of awareness of literature here, but a while ago there were discussions of quantum chaos and whether classical chaos is the kind of thing that looks like a qualitative contrast where you have nonlinear dynamics versus linear dynamics. I know there's a lot of work on this, so it might be the case that you have a well-defined notion of quantum chaos that sets this worry to rest, but that would be at least one case where you might have a situation where the higher level theory explains something in a way that can't be compatible with the underlying principles of the fundamental theory. That would be a kind of case for strong emergence that I think would be more powerful maybe than, or maybe this is the kind of case you meant to be alluding to.
You know, I really see contradictions between unitary time evolution and having definite objects with Pauk's images with specific positions for the atoms. So any time evolution where you start with a state that is symmetric, and where the Hamilton operator commutes with a symmetry operator, that cannot break a symmetry. So symmetry breaking, which is the basis of all structure in the universe, and which is also related to the measurement process, cannot just not be explained by a unitary time evolution. And that's the measurement problem in a different version.
But this has been intensively discussed for 70 years.
But you make auxiliary hypotheses that just explain the problem away, but it's there, it stays there.
philosophy.
Mm-hmm. So the very quick question and then another question. Hi, Ian.
Thanks.
So the quick question is, you use the word causation. Could you just replace that word by explanation? So then causation is one of those words like non-locality that, you know, it has so many different meanings. It's,
yes.
Mm-hmm. So in the way that you mean it, in your presentation, could you just replace causation by explanation?
No, I think there's a total influence. I mean, I'm not at all through with my thinking about causation. I think true causation has to do with some freedom agency, or at least counterfactual ideas, so that one event causes another one. And then we are to the question, what is an event? I think it's something that is irreversible. And I think also we have to discuss about events and how the sequence of events constitutes time. I mean, if there is no change, if there are no true events that happen now, in a specific moment where there are several options, then I think there is no time and there is no causation. Because if the initial condition contains everything that happens via deterministic evolution, then I would not talk of causation.
Okay. Does your view of science, how does that affect the way you do science?
And I
does it? I mean, as a, you know, this, as a heuristic, how does this?
You know, when I make a model for a complex system, for instance, for ecosystem or so, I work reductionalistically. But when I reflect upon what I do, is I put in so much knowledge and understanding of the whole system, the way I choose the parts and the important interactions. I import knowledge that is top-down knowledge, in fact. So even though the model itself is reductionistic. And it's the same with statistical physics. I think you import the knowledge that you want to get out in the end, namely stochastic equal probabilities or something like that.
And do you feel that's different to someone else who would have a reductionist point of view?
No, I think in scientific practice, all of us agree and on our results. It's just an interpretation.
That's a shame. It's better to have
I think some inspirations and ideas come from my view. I think all of our ideas and questions we ask are influenced by our views, but we certainly agree on the objective results of experiments and on many of the theories.
Is on? Yes, it is. I realize it is. I want to sharpen a little bit the previous discussion and understand exactly what you're saying, because it seems to me you're saying a number of things aimed at saying one final thing. And your presentation was had a sort of eloquently making some points, some of which were argued, yes, this were point we agree of. So let me, for the sake of discussion, let's imagine there is a Taliban radical reductionist particle physics theory who claims that the fundamental theory of the constituents is everything that we need to understand the world, everything is less important, irrelevant, everything follows from there. Okay? Obviously, he's saying something badly wrong for a number of reasons. In fact, these things have been said, and sometimes things like that are said, even by me, perhaps, or are interpreted in that wrongly interpreted in that sense. So there have been in the past some tension between condensed matter physics and high energy physics on this ground, and we are more important because we do plastic. We are more important because we do nuclear bombs, so we really understand the world. This is nonsense, but that somehow faults in the discussion. But that's not the core of what you want to tell us, right? So let's give for granted that obviously there are different levels in the description of the world. Obviously, each level in terms of interest for us is, some of the levels are more important, but probably the more important ones are the one on the right, not on the left, as far as we matter. So obviously we need quantum gravity, we need condensed matter physicists, obviously we need chemistry, and these are And I'm continuing down the list. In fact, I want to go farther than David. Obviously, the parts have never existed without a whole. Obviously, full reduction not only has not been done yet, but maybe it's not important, not really relevant. If I want to do chemistry, it's very good to know that my physicist friend in the other department can work out van der Waals equations, but who cares?
Because you want Oppenheimer approximation to make a localization of atoms and to choose a specific structure and practice symmetry.
Right. So I do chemistry. I do chemistry on my own. I have my own constants, but that's a proper thing to do. And it's a proper thing to do for the physicists to do, oh, fantastic, look how well chemistry goes. Chemistry is based on some assumption. Let's see if the, how these are related to the components, yes or no. Obviously, emergent phenomena determined by Howard principles. That's what we mean by emergent phenomena. Okay, there are different kinds of microphysics that give the same behavior. And we can, and I would say, obviously, higher level theories require new basic solutions. That's what we mean by higher level theories. Otherwise, we wouldn't call them higher level theories, which allow us to describe the nothing in that prevents a later, partially complete, tentative, working reductionist account. And nothing in that contradicts by itself the possibility that a reduction account is got. Finally, the last sentence, it seemed to be totally obvious, right? We all know that quantum that generative is not the final theory because of quantum gravity, if not else. We all know that. So we all know. But now you're making a very, so we'll agree on everything. We agree on the importance of the autonomy.
I agree on everything, okay.
I agree with everything I read there and I heard from you out of this point. So I fully agreed, except about the emphasis, like if so many people here would think the opposite. I don't think people here think the opposite. But then you do a last step, it seems to me, which is, since lower theories are presently very likely incomplete, let's look for the way of complete them from higher level theories. That's a completely new input that you're putting in, which you motivate on the basis of that, but that I can agree without seeing any reason for which, in order to understand, I don't know, what I don't understand in the curve of the black holes, or perhaps what I don't understand about quantum measurement, or perhaps what I don't understand about initial low entropy or the state of the universe at Big Bang, I don't see any reason to look for hints that neither in sociology nor in statistical mechanics as a autonomous theory, nor in condensed matter. So it seems to me that we can agree on everything, but the key novelty of your suggestion doesn't follow. Is this, so my question is, I don't want you to convince that this is a bad suggestion, nor you to convince me it's a bad, maybe it is a good suggestion, but is that what you're saying? That from these things we agree upon, it follows that we should look for completing the fundamental theory by looking at the higher level theories?
Yes.
I mean, measurement is a contextual thing. It's there you see the influence from the environment on the quantum system. So.
But this sounds, just to push this a little further, it sounds a bit of a platitude. Everything interacts with everything else.
Yeah, and then there's.
How do you explain, the one thing we've learned about the universe is it is stunningly simple and described by extremely simple laws. Is that something you would have expected from this point of view?
And these laws are good for explaining many things, but I mean, you can by no trick you can get all the wonderful complexity just from simplicity. You always put in something additional.
But the universe doesn't get more complicated as we go to larger scales.
So your brain is not complex?
You are not complex? I'm talking about the universe, the cosmos. The structure of the universe on scales bigger than a galaxy. We see incredible evidence for simplicity. These two black holes merging are following perfectly.
Yes.
The laws for spin two graviton, inferred for spin two graviton.
Yeah, that's quite.
It's the absolute triumph of reductionism.
It's triumph of general relativity, which is extremely good for its applications.
Which is huge.
Yes, that's impressive. But each theory is exact and but it's just not relevant for other things.
I think I'm going. With
guidance about the cosmos to the
yes. That's the proposal.
And I think I have many unanswered questions.
I think I'm going to abuse my prerogative in the interest of the coffee break and say that I think the issues have been laid out, and we have two more speakers who are addressing the similar case, George and Stuart. And so I think we understand what's at stake, Carlo, and especially, in, I think you formulated exactly what's at stake in this question. And let's all go have a coffee break and come back in 25 minutes and keep going.